a production of Pioneer Utility Resources. Heart of Community is supported by the M.J. Murdoch Charitable Trust, helping community-focused organizations across the Pacific Northwest sustain their missions. Because when a powerful idea fulfills its promise, lives are changed, communities thrive, and our entire region prospers. Learn more at murdochtrust.org.
In rural Oregon, an artistic community began 2020 with plans for sharks and jets, for Elsa and Olaf. Their calendars were filled with musical theater and orchestras and ensembles, with rehearsals and fellowship and performances. No one expected what came next as the curtain dropped on an entire season of traditional productions, thanks to a new menace, COVID-19. In this episode, we hear how a community of artists, young and seasoned alike, not only maintained their involvement in the arts through a difficult year, but found creative ways to expand the arts. And they did this by reaching deeper into their community than ever before to prove together that the show must go on.
The Columbia Gorge Orchestra Association was founded 15 years ago by myself and a couple other people. And it grew out of an orchestra which has been around in Hood River for about 40 years off and on.
That's Mark Steigner. He's the director of the Columbia Gorge Orchestra Association. What began as an orchestra with Mark as conductor has grown into a nonprofit association that includes choirs, big band, a jazz collective, a string quartet, and musical theater. Collectively, the association stages more than 40 performances annually.
I think we probably have about 250 performers in the community, but, you know, it extends to the Dalles and, of course, over in Whitesam and across the river. So, you know, we're pulling from a pretty wide area. In fact, many of our orchestra members come from Portland, Vancouver area. So, you know, we have a pretty wide range, but you know, the Gorge is a very artistic community. There's a ton of actors and musicians and, you know, visual artists. It's a very arts-focused part of the world.
Against this busy backdrop, another story began playing out in the opening weeks of 2020. After months of preparation, the theater group brought to life the stage production of West Side Story.
It was right in the midst of our very first weekend. It was supposed to be a free weekend run with a Friday, Saturday, Sunday show.
That's Michelle Fershing, the show's production manager.
And at that point in time, we had heard kind of, you know, whispers or murmurs about this COVID thing going on in the news, but it was so distant from where anybody was at the time, especially where we are in rural Oregon, that we weren't really paying it much mind, even up until that Sunday show was the first day that kind of we started thinking, oh, this might be something.
We also had an orchestra concert in February, and that was pretty poorly attended. I think it was right when, you know, people were starting to be a little afraid of what was going on. And our audience, which tends to be an older demographic, I think was getting concerned about being out. So we had, you know, the writing was on the wall with that.
So we had gotten through that very first weekend of shows and we were really just kind of hitting our stride, and everything that week shut down completely. And we're at the mercy of performing through, we don't have our own venue, so we're using local schools. Every show was very fresh, and we were, like I said, still figuring things out on the fly for that first weekend. Things were going well, and I think things were finally just clicking for some of the performers, starting to get comfortable with, oh, I say this, and then I get a huge applause, you know, and getting kind of their sea legs, so to speak, you know. And I think everybody, you know, the other devastating thing for people was that they had told their family members, well, you know, first weekend is still going to be a little bit rough. We're still figuring things out. Why don't you fly in from Florida or fly in from Chicago on the second weekend or the third weekend to come see the show? And unfortunately, that never happened for anybody. After working on something for 4 months straight, just to have that all come crashing down from this, at that time, mysterious illness that was going around that we've never seen before. I don't know that anybody even could really fully comprehend, you know, the magnitude of it.
Facing canceled shows, lost ticket revenues, and many disappointed fans and performers, Steigner, rather than throw in the towel, got set to work creating a new season that didn't include in-person gatherings. He found a ready collaborator in youth chorus director Corin Parker, who was preparing for a stage production of Frozen.
I had contacted choreographers, lighting designers, set designers, costumers, the whole nine yards. So we were actually just about ready to have a production, our first like sit-down production meeting of how we were going to run this. I had talked to the team about how I wanted to do this as kind of a camp situation and to bring in educational components into the rehearsal. So it wasn't just we're going to sit and rehearse and then do the show. We were going to bring in education as well as for these kids involved.
I know a lot of organizations just, you know, quit doing anything altogether. It was just too difficult, or they didn't know what to do, or they were just going to wait it out. But I thought it was very important that, you know, we let our audiences know that CGOA as an organization was surviving and we were going to be back and not to worry too much. And then, of course, we tried to, you know, engage the performers in doing online performances.
This was not only an opportunity for Steigner to move the youth chorus production online, but to create something original that would reflect the realities of what young people were experiencing. He called his new musical, My Life in a Square.
My Life in a Square basically takes, you know, the fact that everybody's in their little Zoom squares, and in spring that was not still a novelty, but it was becoming a way of life for everyone. So that was the premise, you know, that we're in this, and it's a group of middle school kids who are on Zoom and their teacher doesn't show up. So they basically have to take over the class on their own, and they kind of share their concerns about what's happening and confusion about what's happening and misinformation. And that's the premise of most of the songs.
Writing an original script and score was only part of the challenge Steigner faced.
I wrote the music and I recorded backing tracks and guide tracks for them to follow, but ultimately they had to do the recording on their own at home. And, you know, for everyone, that's a challenge, especially for middle school kids who might not have equipment at their house, and most of it was done on cell phones.
So when we started the play, I was confused at first about how we were going to do everything.
That's Sophie Studebaker, a member of the youth chorus. She had moved to Idaho with her family a few months before the pandemic and welcomed the chance to participate with friends in the virtual show. Studebaker and Steigner described the challenges of staging a virtual production.
It depended on what we were doing that day. So if we were actually doing the lines, the setup was a lot different than if we were recording the singing parts. The singing parts were difficult because when you were actually singing, you had to, you know, make sure there's no noise around you. Everything had to be quiet, you know, make sure it lined up with the audio correctly. So I think the hardest part about that was probably finding a quiet place.
That was probably the hardest part, I think, is getting everybody together and figuring out the technology on their end so, you know, they could record. And then I took their recordings and, you know, kind of made it look like a Zoom class. A lot of it actually wasn't recorded on Zoom at all. It was edited to look like that.
So I have this desk thing that you could tuck underneath a chair, and I put a water bottle on the desk and set my phone on top of it, and that's what I use to record everything.
Well, the first thing that has to happen is you take the audio of their performance, and you have to sync that together with the backing tracks. And that's a process, you know, where you have to make sure everything lines up. And then once you have those audio tracks done, then you have to resync it back with the video to make sure it works together. And then you take that and then you do your kind of normal, you know, storytelling video editing where you do transitions and, you know, close-ups and zooms and, you know, all the kind of things that people do in video to tell a story. So, you know, there's really, I think, three parts to the process, you know, the video, the audio and then putting everything together?
So I think when you watch it being all put together, I don't think a lot of people realize that it was really hard to make sure like everything had to look the same because it was supposed to look like this all happened over a Zoom call, right? So I had a sweater that I was wearing in the actual production, and I had set that aside, and I was like, no, like it can't be washed. It needs to be ready because, you know, we'd go on to the meetings and some days we didn't think we were going to be recording, and then we actually were. And your hair and makeup, you couldn't do anything different with your hair and makeup when you were recording. So I think it was, you had to pick something that you were, it was easy to do and kind of easy to make it look the same for the most part. So I think that was the biggest thing, is just making sure everything was easy enough that if something were to change, you could fix it really fast, like make it look decent the same.
The end result was a production that not only responded to the restrictions of the pandemic, but also reflected what students were living through in their new routines. The show was posted on YouTube, which has allowed a broader audience to experience the production, and while not the first virtual performance for CGOA, My Life in a Square set the stage for many more to follow in the months ahead. Members of the youth chorus weren't the only ones who found themselves tasked with learning a whole new skill set beyond their musical training. Wanting to stay engaged with the arts, the community, and with fellow performers, CGOA participants put in the work to add technical skills to their repertoire. Ed Price is a trombonist with CGOA's Jazz Collective and Sinfonietta.
We're finishing up a trombone quartet recording of Bohemian Rhapsody that's pretty exciting. And what we do is we first member goes into their basement or garage, cuts a track so that we have the tempos and tempos and meters are changing as we go through the songs. We need something to follow, a guide track, if you will. And they send that out, and then the other of us in the group put on the headphones and follow that while we play our parts. And then it's really a matter of somebody sitting down with software and tying those tracks together. And inevitably, there's some difficulties in doing that. If you can imagine three people or four people, or in the case of our full symphony, 50 people, trying to play in perfect unison when you have very little to follow. It's a very different experience to be playing alone than it is when you're playing with your colleagues in a live setting.
It was much more difficult than just singing in a choir in person. Very challenging.
That's Margaret Haught, a member of CGOA's Voci Choir. She experimented with items around her home until she devised an effective setup for capturing her virtual performances.
What I finally came up with, one thing, you know, it's very important to have, obviously, privacy and quiet so that you can hear yourself and there aren't any extraneous noises that come into the recording. But because you're videotaping, you also have to think about lighting and somewhat color and kind of how you look. And what I ultimately found was... my husband and I have a small studio workspace, and we have painted the walls a light gray, and that makes for a very good background if you're videotaping yourself. It's very neutral. I also realized after I had tried it several different ways that my husband's an artist, and he has an overhead light on his art table that actually has the ring kind of light that is used for highlighting for videotaping. So I repositioned that and used that to highlight myself so my face could be seen. I use Christmas wrapping paper boxes and old slide tray boxes to get my cell phone stick up high enough so that it was at the correct a height. And I also used a skein of yarn with a hollow tube inside of it to hold my selfie stick that held my camera. That was my best idea.
Those of us that play in these various groups, we also try to play in small ensembles. In this case, it's a trombone trio. Obviously, during the pandemic right now, we can't get the larger groups together. And the artistic director of CGOA, Mark Steigner, has undertaken a pretty active role in creating virtual performances, video performances. And something he did for the Christmas season was to put together what he called the Holiday Spectacular, which was pretty much any new ensembles or small ensembles that wanted to get together and perform something and get it on a video and get it to him. He put together a variety show, basically, really well done. So we had been working on an old Vince Guaraldi tune from the, you may remember it from the Peanuts, Charlie Brown Christmas specials. And it was actually, it's a quartet piece. It's, you know, made for four people. We could only manage to get three of us together because of various schedules. So we worked on our own. And then one afternoon went over to Bob's garage, literally put our masks on, got everything set up, got ourselves spaced apart, got all the cameras and audio recording equipment set up, and went through this in several takes. Took a while to get it together, but it finally came together. It's a great piece.
Usually I think it takes people several attempts to record. I know it did for me, partly because you are recording yourself and videotaping yourself, trying to remember the music, trying to do everything that you need to do to make the music come through very clearly and with the right phrasing. But you're also trying to remember to look in the right spot on the cell phone and have some facial expression that expresses what you're singing. You know, being a person in production of producing yourself, those are all the things you have to think about.
Lori Russell is a member of the CGOA's Voci Choir and author of this episode's companion article in the February issue of Rural Light magazine. Here, Russell shares her personal experience with virtual performances.
I'm standing in my family room next to a lamp raised on a stack of books to eye level. Before me is my iPad resting on a wobbly painting easel, my phone duct-taped in place just above it. To the right is a paper with the line of the song I usually forget, written in bold black Sharpie. I push start on my iPad, and through the earbud in my left ear, I hear the first few bars of a song. I take a deep breath, push record on my phone, and sing to the tiny dot that is the camera. This is all new to me. After 5 years in CGOA's Voci Choir, I miss rehearsing with 50 other singers in the high school music room on Monday nights, the initial sight read of a new song, the ongoing practicing of lines and lyrics. I miss tuning to the alto voices around me as we match pitch, tone, rhythm, and breath. I miss the energy that moves between musicians, conductor, and audience at a live performance. And yet, like online school, working from home, and virtual family gatherings, we're learning to do things differently at CGOA. Between the constraints of social distancing and the possibilities of technology, creativity flows. We take the essential building blocks of musical performance and reconfigure them in new and interesting ways. I sing my part alone at home, and our artistic director and his editing software blends my effort with those of others into a performance that is truly greater than its parts. As a musician, it's a joy and a surprise to experience each of our Voci performances for the first time. It looks like us. It sounds like us. But instead of standing on stage, I'm watching my choir perform on a screen. What will we think of next?
It's truly affected this area, I think, because even though we're a group of small communities, we have lots of people who are artistic and people who are musicians, who that's their lifeblood. Not only are some of these people doing this for a living, but it's giving them also a sense of purpose in their off work hours.
It's really, I can't find the words for it, to think of the ways that we've been able to deal with the hand that's been dealt us is really great. It's you know, one of the positives, if you look for a positive coming through this, that helps us get through this period until we can really get back together. And it's the, you know, it's the social aspect we miss, and it's the social aspect of being able to perform with people like this and people who live in the gorge that is really why a lot of us do it. It's just so much fun and so rewarding.
The interruptions, loss, and hardship of the pandemic continued late into 2020, but creators such as Parker found comfort in the arts for themselves and as a means of helping others.
As a teacher, as a general music teacher, I asked my students to do a project for a winter concert, right? So I couldn't give my students a winter concert. So I tried to do the next best thing, and I gave them one song to sing, and it was a rock song, and I said I would love it if you guys would sing this, and I gave them a click track, had them sing it. They sent it back to me, so I did everything like it would be in an edited process. And what happened is I said, please send me videos of your family. Like, let's create happiness during this time. We know that we're sad and some of us have lost loved ones, but let's focus on what makes us happy. Like, let's focus on the happy things, right? And I had quite a few students sing back and perform this piece. And I think what they found in going through this process is that they could sing together in a digital way that they couldn't when we're apart. The families that watched it, I got tons of messages back that just said, this is amazing. I didn't know that we could do this.
And as they look to an uncertain future, artists such as Price have hope that the arts can thrive once again with live performances and in-person events.
I've talked about the issues, from the viewpoint of someone who's retired and is doing this for a hobby. And it's been challenging, but we've found a way through. Many voluntary groups like ours have simply closed down, or they're doing one performance, over a 6-10 month period. We're doing a lot more than that. I got to say, our situation is nothing compared to the situation of professional artists who have seen their livelihood, both artistically and financially, disappear right now. And my heart goes out to them. We try to support them financially where we can. I would simply hope that as we start to emerge from this and artists find safe venues in which they can start performing, I hope our audiences will start to feel comfortable and safe coming back to those performances and supporting the arts. Support has been there from the standpoint of grants. Support has been there in our situation from the standpoint of local business support and memberships. But obviously it hasn't been enough for people that do this for a living.
With the significant experience the group has earned in virtual production, and with continuing uncertainties surrounding the pandemic, what does the future hold for CGOA? Here's Parker.
Mark asked me to direct The Fantastics, and we're being very cautious with all of the precautions, right? The COVID precautions and the regulations. And so we are doing a mix of rehearsals. So we're doing Zoom rehearsals and in-person rehearsals. And so we're mixing those with making sure that, you know, we're social distancing. I'm blocking everything so that they are always staying 6 feet apart. We are having it filmed and then shared, you know, via a media site. It's going to be a lot of fun, I think. And because the cast is so small, there's only 8 people. I think it's going to work really well. We're really trying to cross all of our T's and dot our I's on everything so that we can also assure the audience as they're watching that we are being safe.
So I started to think about music education, which I love to obviously be involved in, and especially adult education. And I decided to offer some adult classes in different aspects of music history and music appreciation and music theory. And I called it the CGOA Academy. And we began with, I think, 5 classes. And that was our first semester, and we're in our second semester now, and we're still offering some classes, and it probably will continue, I would think, into spring. But it's just we do weekly Zoom classes, like we're doing the history of rock and pop music and jazz, and we're doing one on singers' toolkit, little tips and tricks for singers. We're doing one on the musicals of Stephen Sondheim. So just, you know, 8-week classes once a week. People come in for an hour. I think mostly they enjoy just being together with other people from the organization and sharing that social time. And it's just, again, it's a way of keeping people engaged.
Steigner says the association is certainly not the only group struggling with what comes next.
Everyone, whether you're the Seattle Symphony or, you know, the Sinfonietta in Hood River, is dealing with the same things. How do we rehearse? How do we make predictions about the future? What are we going to do? And I think, you know, right now we're thinking about trying to have at least a reduced traditional kind of season starting in fall of 2021 and hoping that that will come together and just being able to be flexible like we've been all along. You know, if it doesn't work out, calling an audible and changing our plans again. But I think, you know, come fall, we'll be able to rehearse again.
Steigner doesn't take for granted the good fortune and strong support that has sustained the CGOA the past year. And he's concerned for the people of areas such as New York City, where the theater scene and the businesses that support it have been decimated. But he's cautiously optimistic that the public will be ready for new arts experiences when the pandemic is finally under control.
I imagine when everything comes back, there will be an added hunger for art again because people have missed it so much. What form it looks like coming back, I don't think, as again, nobody really knows. I worry that although there is a hunger for art coming back and people want those experiences, people have also become very used to being self-sufficient and, you know, not going out and not participating and may have gotten very used to staying at home, having the arts and having music and having, you know, those experiences obviously gives people a sense of comfort and shared community and, you know, shared experiences like it always has, whether it's, you know, virtual or live. You know, music has always been the way we communicate in a culture. The arts are kind of like the beating heart of a community that sends, you know, the blood out to the people and brings life to everything and gives a sense of shared experiences. And I think it doesn't matter whether it's in person or, you know, virtually, that still goes on.
This podcast is a companion to the written series Heart of Community, which you'll find in the pages of Rural Light magazine. Read them in your local copy of the magazine or visit rurallight.com. That's RURALITE.com. Our show, as well as the magazine series, is made possible in part by the generous and thoughtful support of the M.J. Murdoch Charitable Trust. You can learn more about their significant work at murdochtrust.org. Heart of Community is a production of Pioneer Utility Resources. Our producer is Stephen V. Smith, our editor, Leon Espinoza. The series narrator is yours truly, Chastity Anderson. Sarah Wooten is our associate producer. Our engineer is Lucas Smith of Lucky Sound Studio. A special thanks to the writers who brought these stories to life in print, along with those whose voices and music you hear in this program. The series would not be possible without their help. Thank you, our listeners, for tuning in, and please share these important stories with someone who needs to be uplifted, encouraged, and inspired. For that, after all, is the mission of the arts and the heart of our community.